And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Join us this Saturday for an all-new episode of The Athletic NBA Show. Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by me, Andrew Schlecht. I'll be joined by my co-hosts Alex Spears and many of the Athletic beat writers that you know and love. We will recap the week of the NBA, play some NBA trivia, and just overall talk about the league that we love most. So while you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee on Saturday morning, listen to Saturday Slammin' Jam on The Athletic NBA Show.
Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast Monday through Friday. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
Roger, TV circuit breakers in. Base 5 square. Roger. And we're getting a picture on the TV.
Do it again!
Yeah, go for it.
I can't. It really has to do with the kind of burritos they eat. You know, I think when you're doing a typical carne asada fry burrito in San Diego or a California burrito, it's going to have a different consistency than it would in an L.A. burrito.
I don't have a boss telling me what I need to write and talk about.
Like, to be frank, I found your prose inscrutable. It's sometimes unfocused and maybe even jejune.
I want to be a blunt, honest take on things.
You have to get up early in the morning to serve Winden, or maybe Tourmaline. So, we've got some good barrels out there. It's pretty gnarly.
Do it again! Do it again!
Welcome to the House of Strauss on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Stars hang with stars. Winners hang with winners.
It's this immediate drop-off. It's not a gradient. It's not a Rothko painting. It immediately goes from beautiful scenery to where you find aliens. I mean, I don't get it. I don't understand it. But it's interesting. It's a normieville. You know how we're all obsessed at this point with the normies versus everybody else? I feel like a Reno is where you'd find some normies for your anthropological expedition.
I mean, you can also just go to Livermore, hit up a little Pleasanton, maybe a little San Bruno. Also,
no, it's a little posh. A little posh. I mean, that's normie for the Bay Area, but Washoe County or Washoe County or however the hell you pronounce it is pretty evenly split. I think Biden took it by a few percentage points. It just feels like
we're calling San Bruno posh.
I don't know. I don't go out there. I don't peninsula.
I think what Ethan's trying to say is more. I gotta look it up. Now I gotta look it up. Where I was in the Bay Area. It's more of the. You know what? You keep talking. Yeah. I'm gonna find the city I was in, and I'm gonna let you know.
Yeah, the only peninsula places I visit, it's Palo Alto.
This is how I know Andy's a full-on city kid because anything outside of the city, he needs to pull out a map, GPS. Yep,
that's exactly what I'm doing.
It's like, yeah, I got I went to this exotic place called Burlingame.
I've got the inverse problem.
Like Reading is what I was going for.
Good idea.
That's the other city thing, kid Normie, move, where they consider like Walnut Creek and Reading the same place.
Okay, that I know at least Walnut Creek and Reading is very different. That at least I know. But I was when Ethan is talking about Reno, I think of Reading. Maybe
Reno's
I'm wrong.
more like Breaking Bad. I think that's the Reno.
Is it Reading? Is it Reading? I've only spent partial days in Reading, you know. I would describe it as a similar aesthetic, similar vibe. Maybe less desert. Yeah. Less desert.
I'm endlessly fascinated by pretty much anywhere. Pretty much anywhere.
Why any of us are in Reading?
Jade's asking if we're recording. Are you recording on your side?
I'm worried about you. Are you recording?
I'm recording. There's just a danger. Here's the danger zone that we're in right now is that Jade will find this conversation very interesting. And then the fans will be angry. They'll be angry. They want basketball. They don't want our grab ass before the old episode there. Yeah.
They're always angry.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to prepare. I mean, I actually do try to prepare. Here's my problem, guys, and welcome to the House of Strauss podcast, hosted by me, produced by Jade, and this time guesting the basketball populist, Sam Sfendiari and Andy Liu from the Light Years podcast. My problem, guys, is this. I try to do my research. I try to listen to the last episode before a guest is on, if they do have a podcast. And then I listen, and you guys – usually bombastic with the takes, acerbic occasionally, are just waxing poetic about Juan Toscano-Anderson and how heartwarming and wonderful this contract that he got. And it's just, what has happened? I mean, is everything reversed? Has there been a 180? Do you guys now love Steve Kerr and you bow to him? What has happened?
No. I posted the Reddit post of, do we need to get four guys around Steph Curry in a flying V, and is Steve Kerr an idiot for not doing that? So that is still the brand. How do you dislike Juan Toscano-Anderson? Like, is he the only heartwarming story in the NBA this entire season?
There are other
– In the entire NBA. That's
there are great. Other heartwarming stories, but I think the NBA has never felt less connected. I mean, this season's weird. Mm. You know, there aren't people – going to arenas, obviously, and it's just felt a little bit more regional, like baseball, and a little less national, which is one way of saying another topic we maybe talk about too much. It's getting a little more obscure, but I'm sure there are plenty of heartwarming stories that dot the landscape, and we only know of the ones Bob Fitzgerald tells us about.
No Fitzlander.
Yeah, right now, there's no flow.
Maybe we'll get.
We are going to get into it, but right now we have no flow in this.
We have
no flow in this podcast because Sam is watching Kings Grizzlies. I can tell. He's watching the end.
Do I have my camera on?
I can tell. You're drifting off. This is like you're my spouse. Like I can tell. I know.
Shout out, Allie.
Sam wants the camera on because he knows he looks good with the camera on. So he always wants to have the camera
beard
on.
Fly. Well, it's also the end of this game. I mean, I'm also watching it, but I have bought into the
addiction. So this is a deflection.
Or a projection.
You're like, I'm watching it, but who can I catch off guard? Because I know they're also watching
it. No, but you know what it was?
Andy's also watching it.
It was that I could hear your quietude when Valanciunas was making his moves. And I also found myself hypnotized by it. And so just I knew we were in
the deep breathing.
We knew.
Yeah, I'm breathing too deep on the mic.
We knew what we were doing. I could tell. It was a tell. It's like how addicts can always tell when there's another addict, when they need to.
Jesus. I mean, just on the – so you listened to our pod today and –
oh, wow. Yeah, this game's done.
Yeah, I guess the Warriors have to play the Stars.
It's unraveling.
But I feel like Juan Toscano-Anderson reminds me of a story from 15 or 10 years ago in the NBA, where it's like the guy who can't make the team, who's drifted around the world, actually finds a role, is useful, and he is a useful player. He's like he's objectively a rotation player for this Warriors team. And
you know, he gets a contract. It's just all that feel good Disney heartwarming stuff that, like, I feel like the NBA has lacked for at least a decade
now. I think so. And I remember that era. I mean, I don't know if it's about the NBA lacking it. I think there was just such an there was such an intense interest in that team. It was crazy to be around. And maybe I should have covered more of that in the book, how insane that moment was around the Warriors when they were on the win streak and they had won the championship. And there was such a demand that we were covering people that I don't think ever get covered in sports, where what can we find? What about the trainer? What about Eric Housen? What about Sammy Gelfand doing the stats? And it was this unusual circumstance where you could just not – there was a gaping maw and you could just not feed it enough. And then you would get these little heartwarming stories on the periphery. And I think that Toscano Anderson would have fit quite nicely in that. We would have done 15 profiles by now. It wouldn't be just Marcus with the definitive one.
I think that that's also come back to bite the Warriors a little bit, right? Because when the Warriors are struggling, then it's also, well, where's Chelsea Lane? She's, you know, she's one of the reasons why the Warriors were healthy back then, you know, not because of these other stuff, you know, fluke injuries, etc. Where's Sammy Gelfand? You talk about him, you know, where are the analytics guys? You know, but because the Warriors aren't
as great. Jerry West?
Where's Jerry West is the big one. Where's Jerry West?
So what's funny is I think that take in many ways is a good take. But there's just no way any of these people can possibly know what is happening behind the scenes and how good any of these guys were at their jobs, right? I think it's broadly true that the Warriors suffered a talent drought on the back end of things. I also think that having to cover all these other people was an education that we almost – God, I'm going to sound like Jerry Krause. I'm not saying we overrate the players. I'm going to say that a lot more goes into a franchise winning a championship than meets the eye. And so we don't see a whole lot of that, which is why people in NBA ops are so bitter and they're so miserable. So they don't get any credit.
Is Smiley Geach the new Tony Kukoc? I wish he was. Abby. Yes, that would actually change the course of the season a little bit.
Oh, Smiley.
Now that Sam couldn't resist, come on.
I was going to say the Jerry West thing is just obvious because he has name cachet.
Yeah,
right?
You ask them, what is Jerry West doing for them that would accomplish what? I don't think they could really tell you.
Maybe Jerry didn't like LaMelo. Maybe Jerry didn't like him. Jerry was like, you know.
Jerry
maybe
loved Dion Waiters. I mean, he wanted to draft Waiters. Yeah. And hey, I guess he had an NBA career. It wasn't a total bust, but
drafted a few good players along the line.
Yeah, he is the greatest GM of all time. But hey, they've got
only three decades of titles.
Nobody they've got his son. You know, it's
I feel like Jerry West also. Yeah. It goes back to like the Klay Thompson, Kevin Love stories. Like
that is the one.
I feel like with Warrior fans that also that gets embellished, like the walk uphill in the snow both ways. Like it started with like they were going to make this trade, but they debated it and decided not to. A decade later, it's like Jerry West was threatening to fight.
I'm picturing him like Gandalf, like you shall not trade.
Yeah, it's like in another decade we'll hear about how there was a gun in the office and they played Russian roulette over it, and Jerry West was all like, I'll do it. I'll do it for Clay, but Joe, you're not willing to do it for Kevin Love, something like that. So,
Joe, if you're gonna trade Clay Thompson,
dude, that's the thing. that is the funny thing. Like at the time, it was hard to imagine that Clay Thompson would become a better player than Kevin Love.
Yeah. Oh, it was. I mean, that's the whole. That's why I'm obsessed with the concept of creeping determinism. How we often convince ourselves that we knew where things were headed retroactively when we had no idea. I mean, the overwhelming opinion from the basketball cognoscenti, or however you pronounce that word, and I certainly felt that way, was get Kevin Love. That's an established star who was making MVP noise. Clay, average efficiency, not very athletic. There were people who deserve credit for thinking that Clay should be kept. Steve Kerr is one of them, by the way. That was something that he put his foot down on. I think
edit this part out, Jake. Yeah, take this shit out. I don't know about this.
It's
stuff
true.
Right here.
It's true, and I think that in a weird way, the Jerry West aspect of the story has been inflated, and the Steve Kerr aspect has been deflated, or at least de-emphasized. That's something that he was right about. That's when Steve's old man basketball instincts that you revile so much changed the course of the franchise in a positive direction.
I have a take for you. A really close friend of mine who knows his sports, best player I've ever played with. You know, he said today, because I wasn't too big of a Jordan Poole fan. He said, and you talk about creeping determinism, Ethan. He said today, his ceiling, Jordan Poole, he thinks is CJ McCollum, maybe even better. He said he has more shift and handle than even, you know, laterally than Steph Curry, closer to Kyrie Irving. And I looked at him and I said, that's not what I would have said a year ago.
No.
But like, and maybe that's true, maybe that's not. I disagree. But I think that's part of like the stuff with the Warriors where it's, man, maybe the front office was right with Jordan Poole, right? But it's so easy to kind of look at him last year on a shitty team and just say, man, he was terrible. He's probably not an NBA player. And now you're looking at him like, this guy, his ceiling is, I think, is higher than Jordan Clarkson, right? Like, that's his comp, but maybe he could be better than him. And so I think that's what the season's been about. It's just been about, it's a lot of, we thought we knew, maybe we didn't know, maybe we still don't know, we probably still don't know, who knows?
I mean, you're going to see a lot of it with LaMelo, the more he pops as a superstar. But the things you do want to give the people who are ahead of the curve their credit, because those people do exist. There were people who were lonely voices in the wilderness saying that they thought Jordan Poole was worth something. Those people are out there. There were certainly people, I think, Mike Schmitz, most prominently, who thought really well of LaMelo, but you're going to get 100 more. You're going to get 100 times more people who are going to pretend that they were when they weren't, right? It's a million people say they were there at Fenway Park for the Carlton Fisk home run? One of those situations, right? That's just going to happen.
I think the hardest part is staying true to the take when things go bad, because all young players go through a spell where it doesn't look good. Like I think about like Jordan Poole. I can think of people who were very high on him and then sold stock last year, and rightfully sold stock, saying, "Oh, I got that one wrong." Do you have it in you to just hold on to that stock for an extended period of time? Because I didn't. I kind of liked him when I saw.
Do you ever secretly judge people?
3 months of Mick
Do you Johnson? Ever secretly judge people for not jumping off the bandwagon, even if they've been validated? You think to yourself, "Well, you were so irrational that you stuck to your take that somehow ended up correctly." You know, if somebody said about Steph Curry in 2012 or 2011, you know, I think he's going to be a multiple time MVP. But that's a crazy person. That's an insane person who shouldn't be taken seriously, and yet history would completely validate them.
They have become the whisperer, the person who saw the future before anyone, the person we should go to for all our takes.
I have one of those with picking the Warriors to win the championship in 2015. And I'm happy people bring it up, frankly. I feel like I get too much credit for it sometimes, but I'm glad for it.
I do remember when you did that. Yeah. In the preseason, you did that when you watched them in practice where there people were like, I don't give a shit about practice or preseason. And Ethan's out here just lobbing that. I mean, what, the season before they were, it was Steve Kerr, right? And as much as, you know, I have fun with Steve Kerr, he really changed that team and turned it. Wouldn't have won with Mark Jackson. No way.
And I think that what I remember of that take beyond my own psychic abilities, but it wasn't psychic. I do think we do this strange thing with internet conversation, among many strange things we do with internet conversation, of assuming somebody is biased due to proximity and not asking the question of whether they just know more or can see some sort of trend that's coming because of the proximity. I think that you're more likely to hear a car alarm if you're near the car. And so because I was one of the not so many people who was going to really pore over the preseason of the Warriors, it was obvious that they had just dramatically changed everything. That this was, oh my God, I didn't know offense could function like this. This is a different thing. You know, I only knew that or knew about that, not out of any genius, but just because I was the beat writer that year. So I had to actually watch these games, and that gets lost sometimes that, hey, maybe the guy covering the team, whoever he is, has good insights into what's going on with the team. You know, I think Anthony Slater is bound to have better insights into the relative quality of the Golden State Warriors than a lot of other people. So that's ultimately what I took from that.
I've also evolved on that view where I think all beat writers have insights on their team that are better than the general public. We just don't know how to contextualize all 30 of them in comparison to each other. That's really where the issue comes.
All 30 of them, I feel like it's a dying industry. Like, are we sure it's not 15 by now? Maybe 10?
That's fair, yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
But you were saying.
That is what I was saying. That is where I'm at with it. Let's go.
There was no additional take there. No, it's just hard. It's hard to balance the idea. I think we're just kind of obsessed with we're obsessed with bias, and we're not obsessed with, okay, but is this true? What is this?
We're obsessed with dunking each other online. That's really what we're
speaking of
with.
Bias. I do want to talk about Bob Fitzgerald. I don't care. I apologize to the people listening to this who don't have the local NBC Warriors feed to listen to the mellifluous tones of one Bobby Fitz.
It's breathtaking.
I this is the season, guys. This is the season when I stopped worrying and I learned to love the Fitz. I'm in. I've decided. I've given into it. I've stopped fighting it. You know, for years I've groused about it, and now I'm just along for the journey. I think, Sam, I'm bringing it up because I think you almost were the gateway drug into all of this with your quasi-ironic indulgence of Bob Fitzgerald and his mannerisms. But I think what's happened in the pandemic, you just want anything familiar. And so the weird tics, the strange PR strategies, the fact that he is actually a very competent play-by-play guy, the chemistry with Azubuike, I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. I don't know what's happened. I'm almost reluctant to admit it to the Warriors faithful, but I've enjoyed this season of Bob Fitzgerald.
Isn't it so much easier to see when he's covering a team that we would describe as like middle of the road, right? Because like when they're a dynasty, he can pull out the full arrogance and like, of course he made that shot.
You think you're going to guard Steph with that?
But then when they suck, it's very easy to get into pure conspiratorial. The refs don't like Monte Ellis. Like,
oh, mode. This is the night that the 36% 3-point shooter hits all the threes. The wide open.
And I think the Phoenix game was really like the crescendo of it.
It's the full range.
Where Jay Crowder hits a three in the first quarter with like 8 minutes left. 8 minutes passed. So we're talking like 40 minutes left in the game. He's like, well, pack the bus. It's over. And they were down 9. That was the best part of, I was just laughing because I was like, did he really just say that? Like, it's 32-23. It's not really, like, the Warriors haven't played well, but it's far from.
It was a tremendous Fitzian performance because then, I mean, you could be annoyed by that if you're watching as a Warriors fan, but did he not take you on a thrill ride by playing up the impossibility of the comeback? I mean, really, he really set that up. It was the miracle on ice by the end of that game.
was.
Pitcher setting you up with the outside corner just to hit you inside later.
Yeah. You guys almost have me convinced. Almost. I can't stand it. I hate it. I think I'm okay with it when the Warriors are good because he is kind of sneering and cocky, and who doesn't really like that? I know there's some people that don't, but it's when the Warriors play poorly that, you know, when you're a fan, you're watching, you're like, yeah, the Warriors suck. And so, or at least they suck this game. So I want to hear about who sucks and who can play better.
So I dredged this up. These tweets you guys made literally simultaneously.
Uh-oh.
They are back to back on the timeline. They happened at once. I don't know if you know this, but this is this is what the intensive archaeological study has revealed. Sam, Fitz, amazing at controlling the narrative. Truly top class stuff. We could all learn a thing or two here. Andy, Fitz is just miserable on air. My God, lol.
That's how the podcast works. We're presenting two sides of the same coin. We gotta let you pick
Get that on a t-shirt. Get that back to back on a t-shirt right now.
We'll have Sheet do it for us. That's perfect. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that was the Jay Crowder shot.
I remember. I couldn't stand it. I want someone to at least tell me some kernel of truth. Like, he's just out here lying, and he's lying with a purpose. Mm. And it is amazing. It is impressive. I cannot deny that. Like, it's like you can't deny that Donald Trump was a great marketer. Horrific person. Horrific president. But, I mean, good marketer.
You have a slogan.
At least for his base. With
Andy has some slogans. Knives.
I mean, you got to appreciate all the ticks, all the quirks of the Fitz. I mean, trying to get the catchphrases that never get off the ground. I mean,
how do we feel about Azubuike?
Oh, I like him
across from, because with JB, it was a very clear dynamic, like, you know, just classic old school guy wants to tell his stories.
Yep. Right.
And anytime Fitz overstepped, he kind of slapped him into his,
by the way, I was walking in downtown Orinda and I ran into JB, and it was exactly how you would picture what his life is like. He was in downtown Orinda, outside the library, at a table surrounded by boomers, whom he was regaling with stories.
That's awesome.
Yeah. They all surrounded him, and he was the clear head of the table. And that's just how he's living life right now. But yes,
just reliving 75 with Rick.
Oh, he's got some story. He might have some. I don't want to get into it. I just the real life JB, and I love the real life JB. It's weird because he will tell you some of those 1970s stories, and they will be uncensored. And I feel like so many Warriors fans who grew up with the avuncular Mr. Rogers esque Jim Barnett, their ears would fall off. I don't think they could handle it. I don't think they could handle real life Jim Barnett. And that's all I'll say.
Now we need
I'll tell
story.
You guys after. Tell you guys after. Tell you guys after the podcast.
The radio broadcasts are great. I will say that. JB, Tim Roy, and there's one more, and I forgot.
Tom Tolbert.
Tolbert's great as well. But yeah, I interrupted the contrast. I interrupted. I'm interrupting Sam a lot today. Sorry.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I don't know how I feel about Ozubuki across from Fitz. I like him in general, but Fitz is such a demonstrative figure. I feel like if you don't push back on him, he's going to just keep taking
ground. I feel like Ozubuki's pushing back. I feel like he's pushing. I mean, you hear the reactions when Fitz is pulling out that, you know how I love my four-year college players. And he says it almost creepy, like Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused. And Ozubuki pushes back. He makes fun of him when the catchphrase doesn't work. I felt like he was corrupting Ozubuki at the beginning and making him more of a homer, and then Ozubuki would say that they didn't that they got a call kind of unfairly in their direction, and Fitz would go, I don't know about that. You could just feel the subtle jab and the subtle pressure, but I think Ozubuki's weathered the storm.
Last year, at least when Kalinas started the job, he had a vibe I think everyone can relate to, which is I'm the new guy on the job and I don't know if I can speak honestly here. Yeah. Where he's just like across from Fitz, and Fitz is doing his Fitz thing where he's saying like, I can't believe Avery Bradley's making all these shots over D'Angelo Russell, even though D'Angelo Russell plays no defense. And Kalina just has to like pretend like he can't actually verbalize the truth of what's going on, which is maybe the Warriors aren't playing defense in that moment.
Well, I think he's been great on a technical level. I mean, Ozubuki will tell you how they're guarding the ball screen. He'll notice things that players notice. I'll be honest. It's a little awkward because I might see him right when things are back, and I'm not trying to have that. I'm trying to have an honest take because I'm trying to maintain loyalty to the listeners. I wasn't a huge fan in the first season of Ozubuki, and I've become a big fan. Become a big fan of this season. I think he's really come along, and I think he's one of the best, just in terms of technical basketball explanation already.
But I'm putting that on Fitz because he is the new guy in the broadcast, and he's not across from a straight broadcaster. He's across from a guy.
The NBA's like used car salesman
announcer. Yeah, no, I mean he might as well be Jim Ross talking about like, by God, how did Jay Crowder hit another three? You know, like that sort of thing. And it's Clint is like an actual basketball player who wants to discuss the game in like a semi-honest fashion. I can't imagine being in that situation because in the back of my mind, I would be thinking, if I push back here, will they just bring in Chris Mullin or someone else?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I think that's a fair point.
It's a little uncomfortable. Yeah.
I do know. I feel like one thing Steve Berman brought this up, which I thought was pretty funny because he does a lot of media coverage, and he tweeted that Kalena was reading the comments of his coverage of the broadcast team, saying how Kalena should. I don't know if he was joking or not. So I really don't know. But he said that and about how like, hey, you know, maybe Kalina should push back a little bit against JB. And that's been happening really since the earlier this season, which I thought has been fantastic. But I'm with Sam, right? I kind of can't blame the guy. He has kind of no idea what he was doing when he first started. It's not like he had experience doing this, but now he does. Now, I mean, after the Jay Crowder shot, guys, Kalina was like, hey, like calm down. Like we still got 40 minutes left. Like that's what he said after, you know, Fitz went.
It's a dynamic. It's a dynamic I'm liking. Yeah. And I think the theme of this will be season in review. People will wonder, why are they talking about this? The Warriors are they're in a high odor. Warriors optimism is percolating across the Bay Area right now as people are watching this recent run they've been on. Why the hell are these guys talking about the announcers? Has your perspective on this team changed? I mean, I don't know when people are going to be listening to this, but just based on the stretch we have seen, the ability to beat the mighty, indomitable Utah Jazz without Conley and Mitchell, but Fitz made me believe he made me believe that they were basically the 96 Bulls. And then the ability to beat the excellent Phoenix Suns. Have you guys turned around? I mean, I'm bringing it back. I mean, are you going to have to drop the shtick? Are you going to have to admit that Steve Kerr figured something out, that the front office isn't a disaster, that you're not sitting in Rome's rubble, that there's a renaissance on the horizon? Is that what we're going to hear?
They've done a really good job at finally playing the way they should once eight players get injured. Good job, guys. Yeah,
that's what they do. That's the Steve Kerr special. Do you remember the semifinals against the Rockets, right? After KD and a bunch of other guys go down, and then suddenly this is Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr's best asset is when everybody gets injured.
I feel like that, first of all, the Steve Kerr stuff, I haven't even complained about Steve Kerr in weeks.
Wow.
So it's been refreshing. Yesterday, I was very happy that Jordan Poole played the end of the game, which I thought, you know, maybe Jordan Poole, not Steve Kerr's favorite player. Maybe not. And you can see why, right? But he played the end of the game. There was enough trust there. Awesome. He made a shot, a huge, huge shot down the stretch. I'm with Sam, though. A lot of this is like, they're always saying Pascal is hurt, Wiseman is hurt, Oubre's hurt. I'm like, you know what? Those three guys being hurt, and it sucks that they're hurt, is good for the Warriors.
We need a word for that. We need a word for that. And I wish David Lee's name was
the Ewing theory.
Yeah, but the Ewing theory was so unfair. I mean, it is the Ewing theory. Simmons did come up with that. But Patrick Ewing, I mean, that was said at the time where Ewing was like middle-aged. I mean, there would be no Ewing theory in the mid-1990s. The Knicks would just be terrible without Patrick Ewing. But I guess it is. Yeah, you're right. The
Kelly Oubre is also not Patrick Ewing. Right. That was the thing. It's Oubre, Wisey. And I always feel bad because it's like, Wiseman's probably one of the big reasons why they're winning, but he's so young. It's like one of those. It's like Sam and I always are really sensitive to that. We're not sure how to say it.
We're not trying to indict him. He was a teenager for most of the season, but yes, that is the case. And
if you can't order a drink, I'm going to feel a little sensitive about killing you on a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, Sam's a little weirdly pro Oubre, though. That's the one I don't totally get. I mean, I saw some pro Oubre takes out of Sam.
I'm actually kind of pro Oubre, too. Yeah.
Oubre is a big man who shouldn't have been playing the shooting guard position. That's my only take. Like,
is that Steve's
do I think he's a whatever $20 million player, whatever the hell he thinks he's worth? No, but like there's a functionality to a player like Oubre if you play him in his prime position. So
yeah, I mean,
I guess there's not.
He plays hard. I'll be blunt with it.
I'm not sure there's a ton of difference between Oubre and Pascal. Like they kind of play the same role, like scoring big man, using a lot of energy. I guess Oubre can do a little more on defense, but.
No. I was just stupidly interrupting you because I just didn't want to talk about Eric Pascal. No.
Me neither.
No,
me
neither. No insult to him. If he was playing better, I would be totally down. We could have a whole podcast on Eric Pascal if he was not injured. But I just have a stat, and I said this stat on the Warriors Plus Minus podcast. I texted it to a Warriors coach because I found it interesting. What do you guys think the plus minus is per 36 minutes when Steph and Poole are playing together?
Good.
Well, yeah, but I want to hear the guess. I mean, it's got to play the game.
I think, didn't you write this?
Yeah, but I didn't. But I presented it wrong.
Are we going per 100 possessions?
We're doing per 36 minutes. Or per 36 minutes, you nerd. Per 36 minutes.
Oh, you did a cumulative. Right?
I did a cumulative.
I remember you did.
Yeah, now you could do it. You could reverse engineer it right now.
Damn, now I'm not a math guy, but you've got
that Lowell education, right? I mean,
I am. We'll go plus 10.
15.6.
Ooh,
that's interesting. Wow. It's It's interesting to me.
Turns out if you put players who can pass, dribble, and shoot around Steph, well, it works.
Because they're giving him the quadruple team. You know, they're giving him the box of one. And so I just think that, yes, small sample size, caveats. But over 200 minutes of floor time with those two together, that's a pretty eye-popping result. I mean, this is not 2019. Where, yeah, a lot of lineups are going to be double digit in the positive. It's I looked at that and I went, you know, yeah, that makes sense to me. That nobody can be.
So how did the Warriors coach? How did Mike Brown react to that? How did
that's my favorite. Yeah.
How did Chris DeMarco?
I love when Amin does that, when he actually makes the guess when you don't say who it is. I mean,
I'm not guessing Ron Adams. I don't think he knows how to text.
Ron text. But he's a little anti-technology. I can't be surprised.
Yeah. can't be mad about that.
Yeah.
I've yet to find a person in his age bracket who just embraces tech with like all arms.
Yeah. So. He definitely has some takes on how everybody's in their fucking phone, as you would say.
I mean, he ain't wrong. he ain't wrong. I want to make this a
Jordan Poole. He's every podcast. One of our parents or grandparents.
I want to make this a Jordan Poole podcast. Oh, yeah. I'm all in on Poole. You know, I'm on and off, and I never really had a definitive take on him other than his shorts are too high. But he's the cockiness is I think incredible. I think the cockiness and the confidence is what really gets me. It's I almost think it's like a Gen Z type. I think his generation. Is just different. I think guys like Steve, some of these, I don't know if they're like, they can handle some of these Gen Z guys. I think Kelly Oubre's of that ilk.
And he's finally admitting he's a generation older.
You're a millennial. So old for this. Yeah, join the club.
I am not. I mean, I don't even like some of the shots that he takes. And I'm like, man, back in, I could never. And I could never enjoy that. But I'm starting to.
I never believed back when he was terrible, but I don't think I proclaimed any wild takes on it, but I just reacted to how he was one of the worst players in basketball as a rookie. Now I'll say this much. I can't necessarily predict what it's going to be, but I enjoy his minutes probably more than anybody's other than Steph's. I mean, I perk up. Yeah. I pay attention. I'm into it. I think I said earlier in the season that he was their most talented offensive player outside of Steph. I was excoriated, gentlemen, mocked, you know, as some sort of insane homer. And now I think I'm a little more validated. We've seen the consistent skill set, how he put Crowder in the blender. And
incredible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm at the.
By the way, I'm watching the Phoenix Suns here. I know Andy wants the Warriors to play Utah, but you can't tell me you don't want seven games of Chris Paul versus Steph Curry. And just that last game last night where they were trapping him with five players and Chris Paul was kind of throwing tantrums all over the court with it. You can't tell me you don't want that.
No, that's the aesthetically pleasing series if it happens. The Suns, they're just a more fun team. The Chris Paul Steph stuff. How there's always so much pressure on Chris Paul. The Warriors should probably prefer Utah just because of the injury factor. We are skipping ahead to them actually making the playoffs, by the way, which it's just weird. Like the whole play-in thing, I guess I support it, but it is weird that they're like,
oh God, of course you wouldn't support. Really? Either you don't like the play-in?
No. On balance, I like it. I just think that we're just automatically acting like there are no trade-offs, and there are trade-offs. That
what's the trade-off?
The trade-off is that you're having a playoffs before the playoff in a playoffs that's already very long, and so
that's true.
So.
But it's good. It's entertaining for me.
No, I like it. Like I said, I like it on balance. But I think the NBA and all of its propagandistic wonder, it's like if Bob Fitzgerald could be a league, basically inspires just It's like the elections in a third world country where like 120% support Adam Silver's move for the play-in tournament. Right. You know, it's like, where's the, I just feel there should be a little bit more of a mix, you know. It shouldn't be just LeBron advocating for Evan Wash to be fired, even though I thought that was crazy. I like it on balance. I like it. I've like with Bob Fitzgerald, I've learned to love the play-in.
I've had people ask me why the Warriors can't make the Western Conference Finals. So if you know Warriors fans, they've already said, well, why not Utah, Phoenix? That's good. And then Denver, Portland, that's an easy series. And then, you know, who knows, maybe the Lakers don't even make it to the Western Conference Finals. I do think
I'm selling that Warriors optimism. I'm riding the wave. I'm trying to rack up those subscriptions at The Athletic. I'm telling people, saying this is a better playoff team than it is a regular season team. I almost believe it, guys. I've talked myself into it. I mean,
especially now that they have Juan Toscano.
Oh, yeah. The new age Iguodala, who's almost older than Iguodala. No, it's okay. Look,
he is 28. It was wild. What I thought.
I'm mostly just worried about Looney. Looney's been playing a little too much. I'm not ready. Like every time I watch, I'm like, Looney played 31 minutes and I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Looney's a warrior, man. He battles. He didn't get his collarbone broken or some such by Kawhi Leonard.
Is he the Warriors Udonis Haslam?
Yeah, that should be his role. I think that 10 years from now, Kevon Looney should be inexplicably on the Warriors roster. I totally support that.
Just yelling to the young kids that they do not work hard.
Yeah. Although I can't picture. I mean, I even asked Kevon at one point. I said, "Have you ever yelled at any of the younger players?" And he said, "No, I've never done that."
Well, because he's a younger player. Ethan, I got a question for you. Do you get a side payment from his Fit Aid commercials with the amount of times you mentioned Kevon Looney on your podcast? You know.
Is he not a fan favorite? I mean,
he is awesome.
I mean, again, it's like with JT, people criticize more. They get frustrated that there's not more offensive dynamism from Looney. And he had that down year last season, so there was some questioning. But
he had 10 points last week.
Yeah, I mean, I just think he's the kind of player I like. And I think this is maybe why I'm starting to buy a little bit more when it comes to this team. They've got some smart players, you know. You get Looney more in the mix. You get JTA in the mix. The collective intelligence of this team is rising as these guys get more play playing time. So combine that with Steph is going to get an extra half a quarter in the postseason, right? An extra 6 minutes. That matters because this team's in a bad way without him. And then I know Kerr, I'm guessing they're going to be scared to expose Poole too much defensively. I just feel like they're not going to play him enough. I can even understand it in a situation where it's the Lakers and they don't want Poole to be switched on to LeBron or whatever in the play-in situation. But I just think there's potential there. Just like Fad is potential in disguise, the Warriors right now are potential in disguise, given that they can lean more heavily on Steph, given that they're going to just go full bore Draymond at center, given that the Poole-Steph dynamic is proven to be this turbo boost for them. I think that, yeah, there's potential there. Book it. Western Conference Finals victory. Here we go.
I wonder what the odds are actually on that. The other thing you just mentioned too, the minutes that these guys are playing, I think developmental minutes are the biggest ones here for me. Like Jordan Poole, I keep talking Jordan Poole, but the minutes that he's going to play in the postseason, even if it's just two playing games, huge for next season. Huge, and that's why I'm sad that Wiseman's hurt, because he could have used these minutes, even if, you know, maybe they aren't in this situation. But Jordan Poole is going to be, what is he, like 16 years old? He's going to be incredibly seasoned, right, by next season. He's just going to get better by playing these minutes, because how often are you going to play teams like Utah in a seven-game series and LA in a win-or-lose type of game? That's wild to think about. And then JT is another one I think about where I don't know if Steve wanted to bench Juan Toscano-Anderson because Steve has to love him. I don't know. I have no sources. I just
he's effusive in the praise right now in the post game pressers. He is lavishing praise upon JTA. I mean, the upset for me is that Steve seems to really be liking Kent Bazemore, and you would think Kent Bazemore would be archetypal drive Steve Kerr crazy and get buried on the bench guy. But right. I think Bazemore has been a pretty positive story. And what I love most of all beyond the basketball is that he didn't apologize to a whining Bradley Beal. I thought that showed true metal right there.
Sam,
we need more of that. that whole, by the way, the whole Bradley Beal thing is probably everything that's wrong.
I would
with
agree.
NBA.
A microcosm. I would agree.
It's not that that was kind of a dumb joke. Like, let's be real. Yeah. And then Bradley Beal gets, you know, he takes it personally, whatever, that happens. Then the next day, by the way, the same day the Warriors beat the Utah Jazz, right?
Yeah.
And the same day that Russell Westbrook breaks the triple double record from Oscar Robertson, which personally I think is just kind of a circle jerk of worthlessness, but it is a record. It is, like, in theory, two big things happened for the two teams that the two players mentioned were on. And instead we just get a conversation about Bradley Beal wanting to discuss his feelings about what Kent Bazemore said. Now I'm just sitting here, I'm going, who's this for? who gives a, like, Bradley Beal? Like, I don't care about anyone's feelings, to be honest, but, like, at least if it was like LeBron or Steph Curry, like a superstar, you'd be like, okay, well, you know,
or
we can talk about
set
this,
up
but,
a
like,
playoff series, right?
Oh yeah, exactly.
They're going to play the Wizards. This is going to be in Bazemore is going to be matching up against Beal. Beal's going to take it out on him. It's going to be Jordan-esque, but no, it's a road to nowhere.
It's just pointless. It's like, and exactly, it's not even the biggest stars on either team. I mean, Russell Westbrook's a bigger star than Bradley Beal. Even though Bradley Beal's a better player, but it's just kind of like, you know, we're discussing the minutiae instead of like what's relevant with both of those teams. And that is kind of like where it's hard to get people interested.
I don't understand. Yeah, I don't. Maybe we're part of the problem is we're talking about the, we're having a conversation, but I don't care. This is you know why? Because I enjoy this. Maybe that's why they were talking about Bradley Beal and Kent Bazemore, because those,
it's your podcast.
Those TV shows enjoyed it. Yeah. It felt like it.
Also, I like the fact that Bazemore talks some trash. Yeah. Like, he was wrong. Like, it's kind of dickish. But
no,
like,
it was out of bounds. And that's why the way you handle it is maybe say one thing or maybe do one tweet, not a tweet storm, like with your wife egging you on and then
media tour,
going on,
like,
First Take. And it's just, I felt like he almost wanted to force a humiliating concession out of a lesser player. And Bazemore just went, yeah, sorry. You know, just hang out with the wife.
The MJ Kobe move would have been to say nothing. And then the next time you play against him, you make it a personal goal.
That's what Steph does. Yes. That's what Steph does.
Or here's what Steph does. It is the tell of when Steph is mad at somebody, he gets asked about it. And he does that little, rich kid grimace laugh of like, it's funny. Yeah, it's funny. That's how he handles it.
Well, he is a rich kid. That's why people don't, that's why these athletes don't like him. No, that's why I'm excited to watch the Memphis playing game. It looks like Sunday is the one now. It's win or lose, right? After what John Morant said, I don't think John Morant said anything that bad, but I guarantee you Steph remembers it.
Yeah,
I guarantee you, right? And not that he needs more motivation for that game. The Warriors need to win that, but it's just exciting because he said nothing about it.
You remember, speaking of that, that series between the Rockets and the Warriors, and those were some great series, but the last of them in 2019, and the Warriors beat the Rockets. Well, I mean, I don't even need to add that detail, but because that's what happened in all of them. But this one was the one that, even though it wasn't the Western Conference Finals, they were celebrating like it was, because KD went down and it was hard. And I just remember, in a very unguarded moment, outside the locker room, Steph is yelling, "Kick me off the court again! Kick me off the court again!" And Marcus reveals that it's because he felt that Chris Paul had forced him off the court. And then when they go into it and you hear the explanation for the Rockets, it doesn't even maybe sound that plausible, but Steph was holding on to it. And he was holding on to it as this motivational resentment. And he does have that within him, I believe. That's there. And so I don't think you're off base with it. Then again, I think Draymond will just, you know, he will hold slights an order of magnitude more and harder. As well. So I can't even remember. Is it wrong that I don't remember what John Morant said? What did he say again? I'm trying to remember.
Now I got to find it.
Oh, he got mad at Iguodala not wanting to play on the Grizzlies. Mm-hmm. And he made some comment about how like the Warriors wouldn't have been good without Kevin Durant.
Well, whatever. But yeah, that will be used.
But, you know, that's enough. Yeah, that's enough. Right? Brian Barr is sending that to him, you know, tomorrow night, I'm sure.
No, it wouldn't make it past. What was the app that was briefly created to specifically curate?
CyberDust.
Something like that. It was not CyberDust. It was a Barr creation. It was an app that athletes could use to look at social media without the poison seeping through that I think was short-lived. Slice with a Y. God, that was a – I'm just remembering. I'm going to take – I can smell the weird garlic fries in Oracle right now. I'm back there. I'm being transported back. I'm feeling nostalgia for it, boys. I am. I mean,
have you been to the? You haven't, right? I don't feel like you have to a game.
I've been to two games. One of them regular season, and I just, you know, I just don't see the value in it. I don't. I mean, you get a better view. You can see things between timeouts. But am I really going to drive into San Francisco, likely get my car broken into? And, you know, for that, when you don't go in the locker room and you do the interviews over Zoom anyway, I mean, I'm not trying to slight anybody who has gotten that arena into shape and according to whatever rules. I'm not criticizing the rules. It's just I don't see the numbers in it. I think if I was Tim Kawakami and I lived right close by, then that's one thing. But when you're in the East Bay and you got that tunnel, you know, call me lazy, but no, I'm happy. I'm happy. Frankly, I like watching basketball on TV. Is that a crime? I enjoy it.
Need my fix. You need your
Fitz addiction is real.
Yeah.
I think that's the. I mean, have you guys gone? You're media. I've seen you at Chase before.
I've quit that life. Wow. So I thought when you said you were nostalgic, I thought that's what you meant. You were nostalgic to go back to the games. Right? So
I'm nostalgic for. I'm nostalgic for Oracle on occasion. I don't know if I'm nostalgic. I don't need it.
Sucks is we're still not going to see what Chase looks like in the playoffs this time. I was curious to see, like, I mean, gun to my head, I'm with you. I don't think it's going to live up to peak Chase Oracle, but like, I would like to see just what Chase looks like
in that setting.
And we're going to get what, maybe they'll get more fans in there, but it's going to be the same socially distanced masked. Like you can't have a drink at your seat.
Which is, I mean, that's the thing. And again, this is not any criticism from me on what should be done. Nor is it an anti-mask take as far as the effectiveness, because I don't know. I mean, I assume that they help in some capacity.
Yeah.
I just don't like wearing them. If you give me a scenario where I get to be at home, and I get to eat food whenever I want and drink water whenever I want. And then you give me a scenario where I am wearing a mask for over 2 hours indoor. I mean, it's just, I'm amazed that they get anybody to show up now. I mean, it's really amazing.
I went to a game last week. I mean, they were free tickets, so I had to show up. Of course, I can't turn that. That was the OKC one when Steph went for 49. But I mean, a couple of things I have gripes with, and these are gripes just from a purely like I don't like it standpoint, rather than I don't agree with scientists. It's that it's not the mask thing for me. It's the you can't eat or drink at your seat, right?
That's huge.
it's like, yeah, and look, I get it. People yelled at me. You know, I'm getting my TK on. People yelled at me, and they were mad because they're like, well, you're indoors. And I'm just like, you know, I went to Oracle Park. I went to watch the Giants, and you can eat or drink, and it's outdoors, right? But they're like, it's indoor. I'm like, I don't – there's one other person next to me in this entire role. There's nobody in front of me. It's perfectly spaced out. And there's no difference, in my opinion, between
– And she's going to get COVID if I have it, no matter what, right? Yeah.
But it's like in the concourse, that's where you're supposed to go. But just, you know, are you going to go to a game to watch the game at the concourse, or you get in drink, right? So I look, Lacob has that degree and, you know, whatever he he has, right?
As I know, we all know. I know where their heart is. Trust me. They're not the ones.
Yeah.
They aren't the ones advocating for and begging for more restrictions. That is not what's coming
right,
from.
Right, I'm sure they are.
I'm shocked. Yeah.
No, and but
the, what are the odds that the owner, sorry, managing governor or whatever it's called of the Warriors happens to have a master's degree in what is it, like disease control,
epidemiology? Yeah.
It's such an obscure, like when I heard that he had that when he bought the team, I was like, cool. That sounds like a worthless degree. And then like 5 years later, it's like, oh, actually like literally the most useful degree ever to deal with what the world is
dealing with
right now.
You better believe he has opinions on this, and you better believe that Raymond Ritter is tackling him on the way to whatever interview where he'd want to give some takes. I mean, yeah.
Look, there are things I'm more informed about than like the general public, and I bite my tongue on tweeting my opinions, and I'm just a person with like a nominal social media following. I can't even imagine how I would feel if I had like a master's degree, master's of science in something.
And you're Joe Lacob, and you have no remorse or empathy, and you're very honest.
You're like universally successful, like everyone considers him a very successful man in all the fields he has, and he just has to bite his tongue on the thing he knows better than what everyone else is freaking out about.
And
at all times.
And it's just impacting his business to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, I've never felt this that is, sympathetic.
This is towards, a, is this car? Is this karma for the KD and how they made the NBA unfair that he has to hold?
I enjoy Lacob as a character. I do. I wish we were getting these takes. It would be way too hot to handle, I think. But I wish we were getting these takes because they would be. He would have, I think, no bedside manner about it when talking about the risks. You know, it's. and a fan might die. But there are many deaths throughout the, you know, in any day in the United States, many people die. It happens. We know it happens.
If you put it into context of the entire globe and famine and everything that's going on, is it really that?
Yeah, it's credit to him that is showing some restraint. I'm sure Raymond Ritter's done yeoman's work to prevent this great content that we want to happen from happening. But I'm sure of it. I mean, this is a broader question. It's amazing to me because I'm starting to write more about the business of sports, and I'm doing it on Fridays. And I made that choice, I think, because sometimes when I do it, there's this feedback of, hey, I'm at the vending machine and I pressed R2 for a Reese's peanut butter cup and a sardine fell out. Why are you talking to me about the business? More with the basketball. So I figure, okay, I'm just going to create a space for it. So if you like it, this is the time to expect it. This is the place to expect it. And it's
Remarket Fridays.
The what Fridays?
Remarket Fridays.
I call it TV Friday. I might have to change the branding. But it's amazing to me that whatever has happened in the economy and the NBA, it's just nobody seems to care much that we have no idea when the NBA will be able to have arenas that are pretty full. You know, I know the Sixers are getting up to 10,000 for the playoffs. I don't know how many people are actually going to show up, but it's bizarre to me that there seems to be very little concern for the NBA's financial situation. And it's, oh, whatever, you know, whatever that they lost all this money this year, and whatever that we don't know when they'll be able to be, because that's the big thing with COVID. I mean, the COVID is on the wane, thank God, right now. But the big thing about it that even a dummy like me can understand is that there is a huge difference between indoor and outdoor transmission. So how is this ever going to really be a thing? And why does nobody seem to be at all worried about the whole state of the league? I need to look into it. I need to write about it, basically.
I don't even know if I have a comment there.
I think the answer is you just borrow tons of money. I think that's what the Warriors did.
I mean, the Warriors, I was literally about to say that. Looks like that's what the Warriors did. I would be curious to take it back a little bit. Is I would have liked to hear Lacob's thoughts on, you know, some of the stuff that Steve Kerr had to say this season. I know we're going backwards a little bit, but I would have liked to hear that. You know, maybe Steve Kerr had some funny stuff that he said this season, and I would have really enjoyed. I would pay a lot of money. You know, at least a few thousand dollars to see Lacob's reaction the moment Steve Kerr said, you know, it's not about chasing wins. I would pay a lot of money.
A few thousand.
I'm borrowing that. Like,
you know,
Warriors.
Steve, Steve was right. It's not about chasing wins. It's about chasing championships. I wish that he had remembered that in that moment, but it's okay. I don't look back. I look forward, and that including with coaching hires.
I don't look back. I look forward is actually the best impression I've heard of Joe Lacob possible. So I'll give you that, Strauss.
But it's not an impression. I'm just repeating things he says to me. Oh, God. The Gavin Belson of the NBA. I love him. It's very, very entertaining to me. But yeah.
Do you think he's brought a bulldog into a meeting?
One of nature's cruelest mistakes.
Just Onion Kuzmich.
Well, I've heard that the Russ Hanneman character is in part based on Mark Cuban, who I do think he occupies such an odd place in the league as well, where he's just one of the more ridiculous, buffoonish people.
driving up to owners' meetings, listening to, what's it, Crazy Town Butterfly?
With the
doors that open like this, not like that.
The rhinestones on his pants or whatever it's called. But Cuban, I mean, clearly a smart guy, but just ridiculous. I mean, that's another guy where there is no shot he won't take. There's no shot selection in terms of what's communicated to the public. The NBA's got some great ones. You know, I don't know if it's him or Tillman Fertitta who is better in that category, but I mean, there's some guys who make Joe Lacob seem restrained in NBA ownership.
Has Andy Lou ever owned jeans with rhinestones? Oh. That's what I want to know.
I haven't worn jeans. True religion, Andy. I was emo in high school, but I never wore I was a big All-American Rejects guy, but you did not see me wearing True Religion clothing. No, that was not me.
I don't understand Bay Area style, and it's still, I mean, it's funny. I've lived here for so long, but it's still a foreign culture to me. It really is. I don't understand it. And we're not going to take the podcast in the direction of what millennials were doing in SoCal versus NorCal. I considered it for a second.
I feel like people might like that one, but yeah.
That was a big thing when I went to college. Like, oh, you're from SoCal. Like, well, this is NorCal, which is a term I had never heard in my life.
I when I went to UCSD, I remember that. It was be like the SoCal handshake versus be like the big rivalry. Now I'm like, honestly, I like both. And I like LA. I like SF. I don't got no hatred for either
Strauss,
one.
Did Strauss wear some skater shoes?
Some Vans. I'm trying to think of even what some.
Oh yeah.
Well, no,
oh,
it wasn't Vans.
Strauss had long hair for sure. I feel like long.
They
hair
had those shoes when I was growing up where they had God, what the hell was it called? They had stuff on the bottom of it that would roll. I can't even remember what it was called.
Somebody, lights on and stuff.
Somebody's
like
listening to this right now. And they're like, dude, how do you not know it?
Heelys.
Like, I think they might have been called soaps or something like that. I mean, all I remember, what was drummed into me, was that you couldn't rollerblade. Did you guys have that? Would you get your ass kicked rollerblading? It's a great Warriors podcast.
I've never rollerbladed. I can't rollerblade, so I couldn't. No, I gotta find these shoes. I know what you're talking about too. Are they called? Oh, man.
I just have this memory, this powerful memory when you're younger and when you're an only child, you don't know what's cool. So there's nobody to really tell you. So you just have these, you make these observations. And I remember like first day of middle school, I'm walking home and I see a guy rollerblading past me. And then I just hear a mob of bleach blonde corduroy shorts wearing you know, San Diego kids just yell Blader and they run after him and they kick his ass. It's just like, oh. So don't do that. Okay. We'll not learn to rollerblade.
CLO, we didn't have, I'd never even encountered even anyone bullying anyone. That's what I never understood with like TV shows and stuff like that, where people get bullied. So I'm like, ah, you know, maybe it was just me. I don't know, but I just never, I never saw it at the high school I went to.
Yeah, I mean, was middle school. I don't necessarily think I saw much of that in high school. And honestly, what I saw in high school doesn't really map onto a lot of those shows. People were pretty nice. You know, they're pretty nice.
I was going to say me too. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have any sort of trauma from high school, and I should have. I mean, I'm a total spaz. Like, if anything, it makes no sense. It makes no sense, but it speaks to the soft cocoon outside of rollerblading. Outside of, it just don't.
Ethan said, I should have been bullied.
I should have been bullied. I really should have. But I think as long as you learn to stay, you know, don't run afoul of the skater surf culture and you understand their taboos of the strange people, then you're kind of left alone. You know, you got to know what not to do, you know?
So you had to watch Point Break at age 11 or so, and then just learn the lessons and you're good to go.
Endless Summer. I mean, that was big. I mean, it's a whole culture, man. I could get into it. I was always from afar perplexed by the surf culture that I grew up around, but was never really a part of. But yeah, they will just get together and watch surf videos and they will be entertained by it. And I don't understand it. And how many people are still listening to the podcast at this point? I'm going to ask Jay to cut the summer.
Dozens of us.
I was trying to bring it back to Steve Kerr. I was thinking of ways to bring it back to Steve Kerr while you were talking.
It's easy. Steve Kerr is of this culture. Steve Kerr's friends are of this culture. It's odd in a way because in some ways he likes to court a certain erudition. Father was a famous professor. I remember one of my college classes, I was assigned an article by him, by Malcolm Kerr. And so he's got his foot in that world. And yet so many of the people that Steve surrounds himself with are just classic, typical San Diego dudes, including Luke Walton. So that is interesting. That's an interesting observation about old Steve Kerr.
I was going to say who's the coach that is always I forget
Bruce
his
Frazier?
Name. He's his right hand man. He's all
Bruce Frazier.
Yes,
Bruce Frazier. That's exactly who I'm thinking of when you say that. Bruce Frazier. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you've ever heard Bruce Frazier interviewed, he sounds like a San Diego dude. Judd Bushler, San Diego dude. I'm not making any judgment. I mean, maybe for all I know, they're all reading The New Yorker and who knows what. But I stereotype my people. So that's, you know, I stereotype based on the idea that if you're really into surfing, it's addictive and you're out in the water all day and you're getting about as much information about the world as the fish are. So that's my stereotype. But but yeah, it's something I've always noticed. There was, I think, Lee Jenkins, another San Diego guy who grew up literally one block from me, really captured it when he wrote about the culture that Steve Kerr had instilled early on. And I think Zest for Life was this slogan that they were all using, and they were driving Jeeps to the beach. And he really had that Pete Carroll energy in the beginning of Molding the Warriors in his image. And it was very, very San Diego-ish.
This is the most Steve Kerr, Pete Carroll, you know, not really knowing how to use their star quarterback / point guard. You know, it's perfect. It's just it is so, except for the fact that
some San Diego bros.
San Diego.
PD has one title and Steve has three.
He's also bro. I mean, he lives in San Diego now, but yeah, it's that vibe, you know. And I think that
define the difference between an LA and a San Diego bro.
I can't. I mean, I think I
Or are we going to go for another hour?
Yeah,
he's like, I can't, but I can't.
I can't. It really has to do with the kind of burritos they eat. You know, I think when you're doing a typical carne asada fry burrito in San Diego or a California burrito, it's going to have a different consistency than it would in an LA burrito. It'll be something very.
I like this way better than Radio Ethan. I like this so much more. You should do. You should do Surfer Bro, SoCal Bro.
That's
Ethan.
Honestly how I talked growing up. I mean, I'm not lying. That's how I talked. You know, people lose their accent. You know,
What would changed it? Just like 3 years of bullying at Berkeley.
Ethan said, "I got way too smart." You can't use big words in that tone. You'll sound even more ridiculous. Right? Imagine some of the words you say. I mean, even tonight, where I'm just like, "Oh, my God."
To be frank, I found your prose inscrutable. A little bit. Frankly, at sometimes unfocused, and maybe even jejune.
I need this drop nonstop on the timeline. I'm gonna get one of the goons to just clip this for me.
Anytime Fitz says something wrong, I'm going to take Surfer Bro Ethan's voice saying it's inscrutable.
Well, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, I talked that way growing up. If I were around my friends, I'd be talking more like that. But some people move, they lose their accent. My dad lost his New York accent. My aunt still lives there. She's got the New York Jewish accent. I don't know. I this is all a game right now at this point to see when Jade cuts the podcast. It's like, when is he going to end the podcast as we talk? Not sure.
Jade's not ending it. He's asleep. We're good.
Well, we should end the podcast now because I have to get up early in the morning to surf Winden, or maybe Tourmaline. So they've got some good barrels out there. It's pretty gnarly. So thanks so much to Sam and to Andy. Lightyear's podcast. Is there anything else you want to plug?
No, that's it. Lightyear's podcast. That's it.
I'm gonna cut that and make that our new intro.
Yes, I'm down. I appreciate you, Ethan.
It's always great. Two of the few honest people in the game. You know, you're doing a mitzvah for the fans because, hey, you know, they might disagree with the take here or there, but I don't doubt that you come by it genuinely, and I certainly enjoy it. Unless Steve Kerr asks, in which case I think you guys are really awful.
I don't even know them.
never heard of them. No clue.
Not my friends.
We're just working to be the Jim Rome to his Jim Everett. That's the goal.
Chris Everett? Wait. Okay, guys. See ya. Stay safe, everybody.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.